Recording is now on.
It is 9:03. We're going to call the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration meeting to order. It's Tuesday, April 28, 2020. We'll begin with a roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel. Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Poos.
Here.
Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff. Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Epperode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, before we go any farther, call to order may be a little difficult here, and before we proceed with that, I'd like to start with concerns relating to the meeting with COVID. At this time, the board will proceed with all scheduled meetings, and the public is still welcome to attend in person, although we don't seem to have anybody here at the time. Physically, we have some folks on the phone. In order to maintain a cohesive meeting, the board asks that those wishing to attend remotely make the board staff aware in advance. We have a list of folks that have done that. We're going to handle those folks in order by the case number. We are utilizing Google Meetups for the remote meeting. This requires the meeting host to invite members to participate, so the staff needs to know who wishes to attend in advance, and I think we've made that. So at this point, I'm going to open up the call to the public. Is there anybody that's called in for the public?
There's actually no call to public on this agenda this time around.
Okay. We're going to skip the call to the public then.
No problem.
Okay, so we'll move on to item 3, the adoption of minutes. Review, consider, and possible action on the following. A1, approve or modify, reject the March 24th, 2020 board meeting minutes. So I'm looking for the board members to review their minutes and make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the board meeting minutes for March 24th.
Second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any corrections or additions from any of the board members on the phone? Okay, I don't hear anything, and for the sake of good order, I'd like to go through the roll call on the vote.
Dr. Alejandro Angel. Let's see if he got on. Okay, Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Abstain.
And Carmen, if you're on there. So motion carried with one abstention.
And Mr. Chair, Scott Donald from the Attorney General's office, if I may, just to make the meeting perhaps flow a little bit easier for future reference, if when people appearing telephonically speak, if you could preface it by stating your name for the record, so that way anybody reviewing this or for taking minutes, he knows exactly who is speaking at any given time.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. We'll go on to item A2. A1 did pass. We'll go on to A2, and that's approve, modify, reject the April 7, 2020 board meeting minutes.
Chair, I'll make a motion to
Mr. accept. Chair.
Go ahead. Steve?
Hey, Mr. Chair, this is Steve Noel. I move that we accept April 7, 2020 meeting minutes.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion or additions, modifications? Hearing nothing, we'll go through the roll call again.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, we're scheduled for formal hearings at 9:30, which leads us to occupy some time with enforcement matters. I have a list of people that have called in, and the list is itemized by item number, so for the sake of order, I'd like to just run these through by item number, and we'll start with 5A1. Our caller is Mr. Holbert. He's the alleger, and the case is P20026, Paul O'Connor, registered architect.
Yes, sir. Mr. Holbert here.
Okay, Mr. Holbert, you're on the line there, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, is the respondent on the line?
No respondent.
Okay, no respondent. Mr. Holbert, I'll give you the floor. Please express anything to the board that you'd like to express at this time.
Okay. I'm not sure how the exact timeline and everything that the board is aware of, but we engaged POCA Architecture, specifically Paul O'Connor, to basically permit some revisions for our house project we were working on. We initiated the contract, let me give you the exact date, but the point being is that in the contract, he was to submit prepare the documents for submission for the permitting, submit the permit, and then, and this is a residential rehab in the city of Scottsdale, and then get it through the permitting process as quickly as possible, as it would be allowed. And then any corrections would be done, as according to him, within a day or two, if needed. Usually maybe one correction, and then that's it. So we engaged him. As part of that process, he pretty much held the submission to the city. Basically, only information came through him. We submitted the plans were done and approved as far as submission to the city. He gave me a receipt of a pay date of 6/7/19, and this is just a basic residential rehab. The process we were told was about 21 days for the first review. And then once it was submitted, there was just a series of, came back for its first correction, which we, didn't really raise any eyebrows. Usually that does come back, and I'm sure you're well aware, and, you'll have some corrections they request, little notes, that kind of thing. So the first question I asked, is there anything big, anything that's a problem? And he's like, no, it's just small structural stuff or just notes that need to be here and there, nothing big. We need to have it back in. Now these were just, and he said he would say, hey, I submitted it through electronic filing. We had no way of telling whether it was actually submitted or not. So he would tell us, he'd tell me that verbally. And then I called the city later to see, because sometimes I wouldn't get any response from him. So I said, okay, did it actually get into the city, that kind of thing, and then I called the city directly and asked them if they had corrections submitted, And they'd say no, and I'd go back to him, and he'd say, oh, okay, no, I submitted it. And it doesn't know what the problem is. That was, you know, once the first correction was asked for. After that, Mr. Connor basically became very, very difficult to get in touch with. I sent multiple emails as these corrections, or as the permit was not coming back from the city. The city would ask for another correction when I'd ask for updates. And that went on for quite a while. The submission for the residential rehab, according to the date that I have, the best information I have from them, from Mr. O'Connor, the city was submitted on 6-7 of 19. The last email I got from him concerning that document, the city's permit, were on, and I've never got an email from him with the actual permitted plans. But the last email I got where he was saying plans are uploaded was on 10-10-19. So it looks like, from my math, it was 4 months later. We never got a response. I never got an actual, he never sent any permitted plans or anything stamped or that. But there was just an ongoing event of, really at one point he just stopped responding in anything written or anything like that. So I have to call and he'd talk on the phone. He said, oh, no, it's not a problem. It's being submitted. It's already been done. I don't know what the problem is. And I couldn't get any information from him. And obviously, we were paying this entire time. We were holding a property. This was an investment property, or property that we were looking to develop at that time. We didn't know exactly how we were going to use it. But we were paying, you know, carrying a note, paying the mortgage, insurance, and everything else, and utilities, et cetera, while we were waiting for this to come and planning. To come out of the permitting, which we did not. We were told and didn't expect to be at this type of elongated event. But at one point, I became so frustrated from just speaking with, when I finally get him on the phone, because he wouldn't answer anything in text or email, really, but not substantially, that he would say, hey, I submitted it to the city, and I really began to totally distrust what he was saying, and I would follow up 2-3 days later with the city, because that's the only information they'd give me is whether it's been submitted or not, and they told me it hadn't been submitted. And it just kept this, there kept being these inconsistencies in what he was saying and what the city was saying, to the point that I think once the third correction or whatever was asked, once we got into October, or even late September, I reached out directly to see, trying to get some information on what the corrections were, because we were starting to wonder if, you know, if the architecture was incorrect, if there was something significant, because we were going to have to sell, we ended up needing to sell the property, because we carried it so long and, you know, other factors, but it certainly wasn't going to what our expectation was and what we were told. And I can give you, I finally got in touch with the person reviewing the plan from the city, Stuart Casey, and asked, you know, what the problem is. I had Paul on the CC, which he never responded to any of this that was going on with this conversation with, not really, with the, to my knowledge, he didn't respond to this email. And that's what the problem was. And this is what the city plan reviewer said. He said, the issue we are having is a lack of response to our review comments. Here are my second and third review corrections, same comments. Please have your architect / designer contact me if they have any questions about comments. Hopefully on the fourth submittal, they will make the plan corrections shown below so we can issue your permit. That was October 8th. That was what, 4 months and a day after we had actually allegedly submitted. Paul was on that. And I don't think that he, I'd have to look back through to see if there's any other emails, but I don't think he ever responded to that. And I sent another email, said, hey, Paul, can you please explain? I said, city, like, what is the problem or what these corrections are. So, and at the end, I never really, he never sent over any documents to my knowledge to us that had a permit. He said it got permitted later, and he sent a final bill for, you know, a few hundred dollars, which we tried to pay, but he never responded that he actually got paid until I sent it by certified mail, you know, a month later or something to that effect. Another two checks. And it just was it was just not the type of professional behavior that we expected and that we were told.
Thank you,
and
Mr. Holbert.
It didn't make any sense.
I'm gonna interrupt you for a minute, sir. Is there anything that you can add that's concise and to the point of this case?
What would you need? What exactly would you need?
Well,
in what context?
What we're looking at in front of us is a matter that is proposed for dismissal or administrative closure.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure who's proposing it for closure. Are you asking if I think that no action should be taken? I don't think.
This is Neil Jones. I'm one of the architects on the board here. I can't speak to Mr. O'Connor's lack of communication with you. You know, it does distress me when I hear complaints like this. But I want to, and it's too bad he's not on the phone to defend himself here. But in 2009, I can't say for a fact, in 2019, the building construction, it was booming, and Phoenix still is booming. And to get a permit takes a long time. And he failed to communicate to you what, in a regular manner, what was going on. So that's on him. But you did get a permit in 4 months, which is not bad in my book, considering what's going on. Again, I'm not happy with his miscommunications, but our enforcement advisory architects that looked at this case, these experts that looked at this case, opinion that the drawings were sufficient. They didn't see a lack of technical knowledge or skill in preparing the drawings, and you did receive a building permit. So there are no technical violations of the board's statutes in this case. It's lack of communication and unprofessionalism is something that's not contained within our statutes, unfortunately. So that's why that's why it's been recommended for dismissal. And again, I can't apologize enough for the lack of professionalism on Mr. O'Connor's case.
No, that's okay. I just, you know, the way we saw it is that, and that wasn't isolated because you worked on something else as well, but at the same time, but the, you know, we just thought the board should be aware of it and make sure that it was adjudicated correctly to whatever standard is necessary. You know, we wouldn't want it to happen to somebody else. We were told two different things, and I know what was said by Mr. O'Connor to us, to me, and what was then bumped up against what was actually happening at the city and what the city said was happening.
Yeah.
And those things did not add up. They were not the same at all. So, you know, there's a difference between the normal bureaucratic process to get through permitting and misstatements. There's a difference. And I know what was that. And that part was, you know, it'd always be welcome for Mr. O'Connor to explain those inconsistencies and what he actually was meaning. That would have to be explained, but that was never done. And, you know, we asked and asked and asked. So eventually, I just said, okay, well, you know, this type, of the information needs to be put to the licensing board, somebody who presents themselves as licensed, and we have an expectation of behavior, and that type of ethics are part of, is my understanding, is a part of being licensed.
Yes, it is.
So we thought we'd present it. At the very least, if it happens again, it won't be the first.
Yes, sir.
You've heard of it.
I hear everything that you're saying, and I apologize for this.
It's not,
I won't forget
the apologies.
This.
Obviously, not your fault. Just know that it happens with this case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Holbert.
I just hope it doesn't happen to anybody else.
Mr. Holbert, this is the chairman. I thank you for your time and calling in. Before we move on, I want to ask Mr. Jones, is there any motivation to send a letter of concern to this person or take any action as such?
I wish that the respondent was on the phone. That's another point about this. He didn't take the time to participate in this case here. Given that, I would recommend a letter of concern be sent to him.
What would you like the letter to say? Something about not timely or properly communicating with the client?
Yeah. Do a better job of communicating with your client.
How do the other...
Lack of spot, but again, he's not on the phone to defend himself. He had the chance to defend himself, but this is all we know right now. So, yeah. I would do that.
Okay.
So I move, Mr. Chairman, that we send a letter of concern to the respondent in this case.
Okay.
To express our advise him to do a better job of communicating with his clients. Take it seriously. That time is money. People are they're counting on us as professionals and licensees to take care of them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones, for that motion. I want to verify that we have all of the board members on the phone at this time. Particularly, Kurt, who are you looking for in particular?
I'm looking for Alejandro. Are you there?
Talked to him last week. He was going to be here.
It indicates on the Google
list.
Meet that he is at the meeting. However, we cannot hear him even though Kurt has unmuted him. And we may actually still be having the same problem with Carmen.
Carmen, are you there?
Can you hear me at all?
Yes, we can hear Carmen.
Alejandro,
okay,
call me
call
on,
back
my,
in.
Call me on my cell phone.
That part.
Alejandro, call me on my cell phone.
The only thing I can advise is maybe using a different device, Alejandro, a different phone or a computer.
I am concerned that I just want to verify that if Dr. Angel has any comments, that he has the ability to comment on this case. I didn't hear anything else from anybody on the board. We have a motion in front of us.
Jason, this is Gene Montgomery. I just want to reiterate one of the comments made by the case assessors, having read the contract that was set up between the respondent and the alleger. There is no indication of time of the essence, no timeliness in the contract. I'm looking for a schedule that was not met.
Well,
I don't see it.
Well, Gene, this is Neil. I understand. I saw that, too. I understand that. I still don't think it relieves us of our responsibility to stay in close communication with our client, regardless. And it takes a long time to get a building permit. It just does.
Did someone second the motion?
So we have a motion. We do not have a second yet.
I'll second that, Chair, to recommend accepting staff
Recommendation for dismissal.
It's an issue of letter of concern?
Letter of concern.
And the letter of concern.
Right.
That's my second.
I would also like to say that Dr. Angel, in the comments section, indicated that he had no comments on this case.
Okay. So we can. We have a motion. We have a second. I want to confirm that there's, if there is any discussion or if we have no further discussion on the matter. So, is there anybody on the board that, on the phone, that would have any discussion items? Okay, I don't hear any, so we're going to call for the question and we'll do the typical roll call.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me now?
Yes,
yes.
I can.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I'll shut up now.
See, that's Soma's technology.
Mr. Chair, there's a concern regarding the record that Mr. Scott would like to address.
Yes, if possible, could well, I understand we may be having communication challenges, and we have members who may be commenting online. We would need to potentially restrict or eliminate that simply because we're not sure if we're going to be able to make a record of any comments. So there haven't been any substantive comments to point yet, but if I could ask that board members not make any substantive comments regarding the cases or any deliberations or any votes in the comments section online, because I'm not sure how we're going to be able to maintain that record.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
Okay.
And we'll continue on with the roll call vote.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Yes.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes matter 5A1. Mr. Holbert, thank you for your patience on this and calling in. We did vote to send a letter of concern regarding the respondent's communication skills.
So thank you, sir. I think the board, you know, whatever can be done to just, you know, what's already been done has been done, and we just would like to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
It's 9:30. We have formal hearings scheduled for 9:30. So at this time, I'd like to jump back to item 4A, which is review, discuss, and take possible action on a signed consent agreement in lieu of hearing for case number P19006, Krizak Henry, registered architect 2707, and his firm.
Dini, are you on the phone?
Scott, this is Mark. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm going to be serving as your IA. If you have any questions at all on this matter, feel free to let me know and I'll do my best to try to answer them.
Mark, could you identify your full name and title for the record?
Absolutely. Mark Harris, Assistant Attorney General, providing independent legal advice on this particular matter to the board.
Thank you, Mark.
Is Mr. Krizak on the line? No?
No, he was, no indication that he was going to be part of this.
Okay. Mr. Chair, by way of some explanation regarding this complaint prior to Ms. Ray's appearance, she and I did have an informal settlement conference with Mr. Krychek about this complaint notice of hearing, which resulted in the complaint in the signed consent agreement that all the members should have in front of them in the board materials. He actually responded very promptly to the issuance of the complaint notice of hearing. We had a productive settlement conference, and Ms. Ray and Mr. Krychek worked out what I think is a consent agreement that protects the public, and in which he acknowledges his mistake in failing to maintain his firm registration. So if the board agrees, then I believe Mr. Harris can let you know, but I think you can simply accept the signed consent agreement and this matter would then be resolved.
Okay. In light of not having Ms. Ray present or the respondent, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
By Neil Jones.
And I'll open it up for
discussion. Have discussion?
Yes, we'll have discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel, and I'd like to hear maybe a little bit more from Melissa, because I want to get this resolved. I worry that, a $500 penalty is too little. You basically worked for 25 years without paying, and I don't think there's any malicious intent from Mr. Krychek.
I am on the phone.
Oh, hi, Deanie.
Hello. Yeah, I've been on the phone. I just couldn't get through. I thought you would unmute me. Okay. I called on a different phone. I'm sorry. I am here.
Okay, we'll continue on with Dr. Angel's comments, and then we'll move on to Ms. Ray if she has anything.
Okay. So my point, Mr. Chairman, was that I don't think Mr. Krychek had any ill intent to not pay the fees, but the fact is he didn't pay fees for 25 years, the firm registration fees, and that's what the statute requires. So I think it sends the wrong message. Somebody who would have paid, even without any inflation or penalties or anything, would have paid over $1,200 in fees. Now we're agreeing for them to pay $500. So I would like to increase the penalty to at least $1,000, the penalty plus the administrative or the investigation costs cover the $1,200 in fees he would have paid to make it fair to registrants who pay their fees, their dues.
Okay. Ms. Ray, is there anything that you'd like to add at this point?
Well, I think that, first of all, I was pretty sure that Mr. Krychek wanted to be on this call. So I'm concerned about that. He said he definitely wanted to appear. So I don't know whether he's having difficulty calling in or what. But the other thing I wanted to say was the original... There was an original complaint that you referred to regarding the past history in which he was not registered, his firm was not registered for quite a long time. And then when he became aware of that, he did get his firm registered. So that complaint languished. There was no action taken on it. And then he resolved it by registering his firm. Now the current problem is that he didn't realize that the firm registration was annual instead of every 3 years. So I think he's indicated certainly in the informal settlement conference and in his actions that he had no intention to disobey the rules, and he was firstly, unaware of the rule, number one, and then secondly, unaware that it was an annual registration. So that's all been corrected. He has sent in his registration. He was extremely very remorseful. And we took that into account when the offer was made. So I think you've got somebody who's really, he made the comment I'm a really good professional, but I'm not a very good businessman. Administratively, I'm not always on the ball. So, I think this is a case in which there's really an intent on his part to comply with the rules and regulations and obligations, and he was very remorseful that he didn't do this correctly to start with.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Melissa?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, the only thing I would add is this is actually the same consent agreement that the board offered to him when the case initially came before you for some kind of board action. But for the delay in proceeding with the complaint notice of hearing, I think Mr. Krajicek really did intend to sign it. He just didn't receive a copy of this complaint in the mail, according to what he told Ms. Ray and I during our settlement conference. So just for additional information.
Thank you, Melissa. To the board members, is there any further discussion on this item? Okay, I don't hear anybody offering anything. I'm going to go ahead and call the question with respect to Alejandro's comments. So please keep in mind the comments he made, and I'm going to go ahead and call the question at this point.
Okay. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Nay.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Nay.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried with two nays.
Okay, thank you. The motion passed, and we have accepted the signed consent agreement from the respondent. That concludes the case. Thank you, Ms. Ray. Thank you, Dr. Angel, for your input on that.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
You're very welcome. Have a good evening.
I apologize that I couldn't get into the call quicker.
No worries. You were here. We appreciate it.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you all.
Thanks, Deanie.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll move on to the next enforcement matter, and that is 5A2. We have a call-in from the alleger, Walt Young. Mr. Young, are you on the phone? I don't hear Mr. Young. We'll move on to 5.
Respondent?
Is the respondent on?
Yes, I'm Andrew Nasowski.
Okay, so we'll move on to 5A2. This is case P20030. And the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's engineering plan for the Ufke's remodel project on North 76th Street in Scottsdale, Arizona, placed a structural beam 20 feet from its correct location, and the respondent unnecessarily called for size verification of existing footings, which would require that the client jackhammer the inside of the slab. The investigative conclusions are that the respondent has not violated the board's practice act. Staff recommends that the complaint be dismissed. Mr. Young is not on the phone, is that correct? Okay, I don't hear anything from Mr. Young. So Mr. Natupski, I'll give you the floor at this time.
An enforcement advisory board of two people recommend the complaint be dismissed, and I understand the board has also recommended the case be dismissed. I would be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any, but there we are. Just as an aside, I've been practicing engineering for 49 years. This is my first complaint, and I have awards of excellence in structural engineering from the Structural Engineers Association of Arizona, the Institute of Hong Kong Engineers, Consulting Engineers of BC, and the Institute of Singapore Engineers. So I don't really have anything more to say. I hope the case is dismissed, and I'll answer any questions anybody has.
Thank you, sir. Does anybody from the board have any questions of the respondent? Hearing none, at this point, I'll make the motion that we dismiss case P20030, agenda item 5A2.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion from the members of the board? Hearing none, we'll head to the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foos?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Sorry, aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, so we've dismissed the case. We're going to move on to the next item. On my list in front of me, I have a call-in from Robert Burson and Christopher Hosack and Angie Moore, David Moore, and those are all for 585. Are you present on the phone?
Christopher Hosack is here representing Mr. Burson. I think Mr. Burson's here.
David and Angie Moore are here.
Okay. At this point, Mr. Hosack, would you like us to direct all the questions to you on behalf of the respondent for simplicity over the phone?
I'm happy to have Mr. Burson answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Okay, so we'll start with the alledgers then. Either Angie Moore or David Moore, this is your time to address the board and tell us anything that you feel you'd like to add to this case.
I don't think that we have anything to add. I apologize. We didn't realize that this was a hearing for dismissal, so we thought we were just coming on to answer questions. We just paid for a set of architectural plans and found out later that there were no measurements. So that's it.
Okay, thank you. For the sake of keeping things moving along then, I will move that we dismiss case P20018, Robert Burson, agenda item 5A5.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion from the members of the board?
Mr. Chairman, this is Alejandro Angel. If I have an opportunity.
Please, yeah.
Thank you. So I understand the you know that everything worked out fine in the end. I mean the beam didn't need to change, so the project proceeded. But I do find it concerning that somebody would design plans without taking measurements or doing a field visit to review things. So I don't think that's part of the standard of care. And it's not like he was off, you know, half an inch. He was off 2 feet on a 24-inch beam. The consequences, even though there weren't any, consequences could have been significant if the beam needed to be upsized or something that wouldn't fit or wouldn't have clearance or anything else. So I don't think the registrant did his job So my preference would be that we issue a letter of concern.
Alejandro, this is Neil speaking. When this was brought to the respondent's attention, he did fix the beam and made it where it needed to be added, the 22 inches onto it, and it was permitted for construction. So, you know, the way I look at this is an unforeseen condition. The respondent was given a set of plans from a general contractor who said use these. Yes, the respondent should have gone out and taken his own measurements, but again, we don't have a communication that happened between the parties. And once it was brought to the respondent's attention, he did take care of it, and the building permit was issued. So I don't see any issue here other than, again, miscommunication.
Neil, I agree with you that everything worked out and that, you know, the respondent was very cooperative once things came up. But, I mean, they had already demolished at that point. What if it couldn't be fixed? And, I mean, the only reason this happened, this is not an unforeseen condition. Unforeseen is you can't see it ahead of time. In this case, it was absolutely clear what the measurement should have been. He just didn't go out there. So I'm still thinking that it's at least a letter of concern.
This is Angie Moore. May I respond to the comment?
Please do.
So it turns out, I mean, it wasn't just the beam. We did need to get re-permitted for the beam, but we actually, the entire remodel plan was off. I mean, we had to redo all of our cabinets. We had to reorder them. We actually had to completely reconfigure on our own our master bathroom because the new measurements didn't work. We had to move things 8 feet and reconfigure everything. We had problems later on because the island wasn't in the right place and the lights were off because the measurements were all off. It was not just the beam, but the beam was the initial issue.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Moore, and I want to keep focused on our investigation that centers around the beam.
Maybe the attorney has a response
okay.
to that.
Mr. Jones has suggested that maybe the attorney has a response to that, and I assume you mean Mr. Hossack. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hossack, do you have any response for that? Or?
Well, excuse me, in the response, they were asked to meet at the site, or my client asked to meet at the site and asked to meet Mr. Dickinson. They were told they didn't have access, and I'm trying to pull up the response, that specific part. And Kevin, are you on the phone?
This is for Robert Burson. Who's Kevin?
Mr. Hossack, we don't have anybody named Kevin registered here on the list or signed up on our list here.
We're looking for Robert Burson.
They had it as Robert Burson, I think, but I deal with him as Kevin.
Okay, we confirmed he does go by Kevin. Okay, so Kevin is Robert Burson.
Is Mr. Burson?
It was basically, there was some reason they didn't have immediate access, but anyways, the contractor said this is the same essential remodel, start with these, which, you know, that was the concept.
Hey, this is Robert Burson. I was able to figure this out technically on how to unmute myself. Sorry for the delay.
Yeah. Mr. Burson, this is Jack Gilmore. I'm one of the board members. I have a question for you.
I'm a
landscape architect.
Sure.
I'm a landscape architect as well. Were you aware that the plans the general contractor gave you did not match the house you were working on?
was told they were identical model, and the discussion with the contractor was I was to utilize those plans because there was a tenant currently residing
at the house, and I was not to disturb them, and that any discrepancies would be figured out once he was on site, which unfortunately that did not happen. So, to answer your question, I was under my impression that they were identical plans.
Okay.
This is Neil Jones, architect. Do you feel like it was your responsibility to go out and check, do a field check anyway, and your attorney is saying that you were not given that opportunity, though? So I'm trying to get to the bottom of that one.
Right, that was my understanding, that we were not to disturb the tenant. So it was something we had to use the existing plans for, and go forward from there.
Mr. Burson?
Yeah, please respond.
This is Alejandro Angel. I was wondering, did you get that in writing, that you weren't to go in and disturb him? Because all I see on your response is that you were to use the plans for the neighbor's house as a preliminary design. So I would have expected, you know, either something in writing or your plans to say that you were relying on measurements by others, or to say that dimension needed to be verified when construction started, or any of those disclaimers to explain why you didn't take measurements. Did you do any of those?
I had disclaimers on my plans that the GC was to field measure and verify all dimensions prior to commencement of construction. I covered it that way. There was most of the communication verbal with the contractor, unfortunately, which is definitely a lesson learned on my part. That will never happen again.
Again, this is Neil Jones. Given what I've just heard, I have to place some responsibility on the contractor, too. If he has a set of plans and he's out there doing a pre-construction walk and discovers that, you know, things aren't lining up, dimensions aren't correct, you know, he then has a responsibility to communicate back to you that things aren't lining up right. You know, you did have that information on your plans, that, like I, you know, anybody would do, you know, check, field verify existing dimensions. That would be on the contractor. That's what I
think. Yeah. Unfortunately, nothing was brought to my attention until after a complaint had been made. There's definitely some communication gaps directly between me and the client that would have been helpful to resolve a lot of this stuff up front, but unfortunately most of the communication went through the contractor, so he had a lot of the power when it came to communication.
This is Angie Moore. Would it be all right if I spoke again?
Yes, please.
I only wanted to say that it was our understanding that the contractor and Mr. Burson did come out to the house, that they originally met out here and walked around, and that's when the plans were given to them. Again, that's what we were not living here at the time, but our tenant was very, very accommodating.
Well, again, this is Neil Jones, the architect. I still place, given what I've heard, I place a large part of this responsibility on the contractor, not the architect. So I would move to dismiss this case.
We're under motion right now.
We are?
And a second? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is the discussion period. So with that, Angie, thank you for your additional comments here. I'm going to ask the board members on the phone, do you have any further discussion on this item, any questions or concerns or anything that you want to share before I call the vote?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. I just wanted to note that When I look at the plans, it doesn't say that contractor is responsible for verifying dimensions. It just says, you know, verify existing conditions. That's very broad, and I think I would like to see something more specific if you're relying on somebody else's measurements or a neighboring house plan without measuring anything. I still think the architect is responsible for doing his due diligence.
Dr. Angel, how does that sentiment line up with what you perceive our assessments as saying?
How does that line up with what, Mr.
The
Bruce?
Assessments, the case assessments. You're making an observation. How does that fit with the case assessments in your, from your point of view?
Yeah. Well, I'm basing it, you know, on professional experience. When you see even asphalt plan for the same project, you try to verify them. I find it hard to believe that we would design something without information from that project, you know, from a neighboring house. And again, the respondent said that he was to rely on that for preliminary design, which is very different than permitted drawings.
So I guess what I'm getting at, Dr. Angel, is that's your personal standard. I share a similar standard, and just for everybody on the phone there, I make my living making measurements, so I think that the measurements should have came first, but I also understand that that doesn't always happen, and I've seen many engineering plans that have the same effect, where it's, we're going to do some design, we have an intent, field verified, beat it to fit, paint it to match, so to speak. So I really can't, I'm not getting out of the assessments any kind of standard that would strongly reinforce my personal standards.
True. I hate to go against the assessment, but I also don't see anything where they said, explain why they think it wasn't necessary to measure.
Well, the drawing said verify dimensions in the field, Alejandro. That means dimensions need to be verified in the field by the contractor. Just because you don't have his name on it doesn't relieve him of that responsibility. This is just a big miscommunication between the three parties, or the two parties involved.
Yeah, but I think the professional is the one who should have the better judgment there and figure out that he should have measured. Again, the plans don't say measure. The plans say verify field conditions.
Which and means the contractor needs to verify field conditions. But I understand and I agree.
It could mean anything. It could mean check the temperature. It could mean, you know, check that the window's open. I mean, that's just a cop-out, in my opinion. And I think you can do that for, you know, stuff that's, I don't know, de minimis or unimpactful for things, but something as significant as, you know, where he went in and actually hired a sub to design the beam and not check the dimension seems, poor professional practice and below what we require of our registrants for technical knowledge and skill. I think any other registrant in the same situation at the same time, same place, who'd have checked.
This is Jason, Dr. Angel, and I, as much as I try to hold that logic as a personal standard, I'm not sure that I see that out of everybody practice-wide. I mean, there's just opportunities where things are dynamic. You know, projects are dynamic, and measurements are sometimes made after the fact, and so As much as I like to think that I hold that as a personal standard, I don't see where we can nail down a solid standard that says that that says anything other than dismissal here.
Okay. I understand, Jason.
Mr. Jones, do you know of any standards or anything that would support or deny this?
We've been on this road so many times, it's still, again, Mr. Burse, you should have, you know, taken a more active role in this, but when if it's as flagrant as the homeowner is saying about nothing, the lights, the kitchen counter, the this, the that, or the other, nothing is not lining up, then it's incumbent upon the contractor to call a meeting, get everybody together and go, what's going on here, instead of starting construction. I just don't get that in my world. When it's that bad, you get everybody together and go, what the hell's going on? Period.
Yeah, the general structural notes, the drawing, the general structural notes clearly indicates the contractor shall be responsible for verifying all dimensions in the field prior to fabrication and to resolve any discrepancies with the architect.
So, Gene, following up on that statement, do you see anything really abrasive here?
No, I think it was clearly laid out in the architect's plans what the expectation was.
Thank you. Carmen, are you willing to weigh in on this issue?
Yeah, unfortunately, the outcome is bad, but that's usually what happens when communication falls apart. I don't see a technical standard issue here, unfortunately.
Thank you. Does anybody have any further comments before we move to the vote? Any of the board members?
Jason, I'm just going to take 10 seconds to explain my vote. I think it's acceptable to rely on plans that were permitted for that house. I don't think it's acceptable to rely on plans for another house and not check them. That's why I'm going to vote no.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. Any other comments? At this point, we'll go to the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Nay.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried with one nay.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Angel, for your input on that. That concludes case P20018. And I'd like to thank the Moores, Mr. Burson, and Mr. Ronsack for showing up, calling in. We'll move on to case number 5A9, which is P20017, Roderick Lane, PE Civil. And if I can ask, on the phone we should have Mr. Lane, Mr. Is it Yauch or Zhao?
Yeah, Mr. Yauch is the last name.
Yauch, okay, thank you.
Mr. Lane is here as well.
Mr. Lane is here. Is Mr. Brazelton?
I am.
And Mr. Hammett? Dallas Hammett? I don't hear a Dallas Hammett. Wow. Okay.
Sorry, sir. I had to get unmuted. I am here.
Okay. You are Dallas Hammond, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. This is case number P20017. Respondent is Roderick Lane, PE Civil 40226. Synopsis of the complaint is on September 9th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, in his capacity as the district engineer for ADOT, overruled the professional judgment of the alleger, who identified and advised respondent that a section of thermoplastic striping that had been applied to Interstate 19 was not in compliance with the standards relative to its reflective value and ADOT specification. The investigative conclusion is that the respondent did not violate ARS 32128C2 and ARS 32128C4 as it relates to R430-301-2. So there was a conclusion that there's no violations, and staff recommends that the complaint be dismissed. For the record, we have an EAC and case assessments. Go ahead, Dr. Angel.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to disclose that I know the respondent, but I think I can be fair and impartial in this case.
That's good.
Thank you. Okay, so let's start with the alleger in this case, which I believe is represented by Mr. Yauch.
That's correct. I'm the alleger.
Okay, so this is your time to, we're going to open the floor to you to speak to the board.
Okay, what went on, and you probably have the notes associated with this. So about 60% of the strike was in reject mode. There were two other projects that were striked by the same subcontractor. Both of those projects got restriked. Same issue. With this one, about 60% of the, or 40% of the stripe, which is on a 10-mile job, is 40 miles, so you figure 40% of that, whatever that is, was in reject mode. I wanted the contractor to restripe it. I got a call from Jeremy Moore, who is Rod Lane's assistant district engineer, and they wanted me to go out and video the stripe. And I asked him why, and he said that Rod Lane wanted him to make this go away. So I called Rod Lane right after that, and Rod's response was, he did not want to have to deal with the PM with Ashton, who was Brian Andrews. So they want to make this go away because he did not want to have to deal with a contractor. So I took my assistant, who is also a PE but is not working in that capacity at the time, and we did a video of the striping. The striping on a video with the new video cameras are light gathering, so you're not going to see anything, and I told them that. We did it anyway. So then I went back into the office. This was on a Tuesday. I think we did it on a Wednesday. Thursday morning, I went over to Jeremy's office, put the camera on his desk, and was leaving the office when he came in. I told him, you can't be doing this, Jeremy. You can't have ADOT specifications and Jeremy Moore specifications. The conversation was about a 13-second conversation. I left and went back over to my office and pulled up the construction bulletin concerning this, which I was had already looked at. And basically what they say is you can accept areas, small areas, without doing a reset. This is not a small area, and it does not meet the construction bulletin requirements for not retesting. And that's what they wanted to do, is not have to retest this material. I spoke to my inspectors prior to doing all this. The inspector staff said it was visibly no glass and thermoplastic. And I don't know how you guys, what you know about it, but there is glass beads in it when it's put down. And then there are additional glass beads added after it's on the ground. So after this conversation, I sent the information over to them, and that afternoon I was terminated. They fired me because I, as an engineer, disagreed with what they were doing. So that's my biggest complaint. Whether it meets an ARS standard or any other legal issue that you want to bring forward, which is what was brought forward, And if I read him, I would vote to not have him have any done with those legal standards. So it's an ethical standard. I was terminated as an engineer, and what this does is make other people, and I know other people that work in the district, are afraid to come forward when crap like this goes on because they're afraid of losing their job. I was told by the board that I dealt with, nice folks, that that's how business is. Well, that's not how business is. When I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Arizona and several other states, to be fired because I disagreed with how this was handled. And it puts a quash on anyone else who wants to speak up. Who wants to be fired for saying this is not right? That's how you have problems. That's how bridges collapse. That's how you have fields that collapse. And that's why you have a lot of other issues that collapse because people are afraid to come forward. So that's pretty much the end of what I had to say. It's an ethical issue with me, and it should never happen to anyone else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yao. Okay, we will move on to the respondent's attorney, Mr. Brazelton. Would you like to speak for the respondent or have the respondent speak for himself or some combination thereof?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Mr. Brazelton. I'll start, and if there are questions, Mr. Lane is on the line, and he'll be happy to answer those as well. And then also Mr. Hammett would like to speak briefly. He is the state engineer, and I know he has one or two comments that he would like to make as well. So if you don't mind, I'll just start, and I'd like to first thank the director for putting this on the agenda today. We appreciate that very much. I know it wasn't on the initial agenda, and we appreciate the opportunity to get this before the board today and to not have it continue to linger. Mr. Lane has never been charged with any complaint filed against him previously or been charged with any professional misconduct allegations, and this has now been pending for nearly 8 months. Let me address the a couple of the points that were raised by Mr. Yauch. First of all, everything that he just told the board was in his complaint and has been the subject of three prior investigations. All of the board members, I'm sure, have copies of, there were two independent reports that were prepared by engineers who analyzed this record and reached the conclusion that there were no violations here. Mr. Hayes prepared the more thorough report, David Hayes. And there are a couple points in his report that I just want to mention quickly because it addresses this allegation that there were, I don't know, Mr. Yauch used two different numbers. 60% of the striping was in reject mode, whatever that is, and then he said 40%. So in Mr. Hayes's report, his review of the record indicated that there was no indication of uncorrected applications or material deficiencies noted in the record whatsoever. The other thing that's important in my mind as it relates to that allegation is that there is a summary by the ADOT inspector as the thermoplastic was installed. The ADOT inspector kept a summary, and he noted in a number of locations where there had been inadequate or improper installations, and those were corrected immediately. So you have a summary of that in the record as well. And then let me comment also on the video that Mr. Yauch was asked to take, and he did take it. He came in and brought the camera to his supervisor, put it on the supervisor's desk, and if he thought he had evidence in that video of inadequate installation or improper installation of the thermoplastic, he should have at that point simply sat down with his supervisor, said, let's look at the video and I'll show you where there are inadequate thermoplastic and where it needs to be corrected. He didn't do that. He just left the camera there, walked away, and then became angry, and that ultimately is why he got fired. So there's there are a number of flaws in the allegations regarding the quality of the construction here that just don't add up. And then the real essence or the real motivation for this complaint is what Mr. Yauch has just told you. He got fired, and he's mad about it. He didn't tell you in his complaint that he has subsequently now filed a notice of claim against both ADOT and the state of Arizona and is now seeking to have the taxpayers pay him for sitting at home as he's been discharged from his employment. So bottom line, there are three independent investigations that have taken place, the two volunteer professional engineers and the Enforcement Advisory Committee, all of whom have reviewed this and determined that there were no violations of either of the alleged statutes. And we would ask that you dismiss the complaint pursuant to the staff's recommendation and the Advisory Committee's recommendation. I would. I'd also ask if you would, to permit Mr. Hammett to speak just briefly, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, sir, and we'll move on to Mr. Hammett.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Board. My name is Dallas Hammett, and I'm the Deputy Director for Transportation and State Engineer for the Arizona Department of Transportation. During my 21 years with the department, I have served as a resident engineer, a district engineer, and for the past 5.5 years, the state engineer. The director of ADOT delegates the administration of the state highway construction program to me, a state engineer. This delegated authority sets dollar limits on approving change orders, as well as the responsibility and the authority to make decisions on behalf of the department in the administration of the construction program and individual construction projects. I, in turn, have delegated much of that authority and responsibility to the division director and to the district engineers. At the project level, resident engineers have a delegated authority from the district engineer. ADOT standard specification encourages that partnering is used on every construction project, and every construction project has an escalation ladder developed at that time. On ADOT's side, the level of authority moves from resident engineer to district engineer to the state engineer. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm getting feedback and I don't know if it's me or somewhere else, so I'm going to keep going through unless you cannot hear me.
Keep going, we hear you fine.
Okay, thank you, sir. One very important note, that once an issue has been escalated to the next person on the escalation ladder, the decision-making authority is that person on the escalation ladder concerning that issue. On a professional note, I have worked with and known Rod Lane in one way or another for the past 15 years. As I moved into the state engineer's office, Rod was promoted to district engineer. I was called upon to review decisions Rod made in the oversight of construction projects in his district. As issues were escalated to me, sometimes I agreed completely with Rod and his team, and the decision was unchanged. Other times, I proposed a different solution. At ADOT, our core values are accountability, integrity, and respect. Rod Lane is a person I have found that exemplifies those values. In addition, I have found Rod to be an engineer who looks out for the interests of the department and the traveling public over his own. Mr. Chair and Board, thank you for allowing me this time to speak.
Thank you, sir. I would like to hear from our PTOE, Dr. Angel. Are you still on the line?
Mr. Chair, I'm on the line.
Do you have any comments or thoughts on this?
I do. I'd like to hear from others, but maybe I'll start with a brief comment, and maybe everybody else can chime in. I do have some more technical comments maybe for later. So I see the main issue here being that was brought up is whether there's negligence or you know, any other issues also, you know, with the dismissal of Mr. Roush. I think that portion of the case is really not a board purview or consideration, whether the removal of the RE from the job is appropriate or not, is for somebody else to decide. I think what we ought to focus on here is public safety, and do we think that the situation on I-19 is, you know, protects the public sufficiently or not. So that's what I'd like to maybe focus our discussion on.
Okay. I believe that...
And I guess, let me, the other thing I would say is, the only way on there I would see us chiming in on the removal of the RE is if we had evidence of, you know, lack of moral character of something along those lines, which I don't think we have. So that's why I don't think we should get into that.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Angel. I believe that we've heard from the alleger, the respondent's attorney, Mr. Hammett. Do we want to hear from the respondent? Does anybody have any questions of the respondent? And Dr. Angel, I'll leave you at lead on this if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Okay.
Does anybody have any?
Go ahead, Dr. Angel.
No, I was just going to ask if anybody on the board had any thoughts or questions. I did want to ask a few questions, but it's not a rush.
This is Jason. I certainly do. This sounds like a contracting issue to me. Now, maybe I'm a little off base here, but really, I mean, we're talking about the installation of thermoplastic, which is a predefined product, right? And then there's an additional application of glass beads on that with some paint or the adhesive or cohesive material. But really, it sounds like an installation issue that should be settled between the parties that are sitting here at this table. I don't see where this rises to any level of technical ability. I'm sure that the spec on the plan said the appropriate thing, and the problem was the installation of that product. Does that sound reasonable to you, Dr. Angel?
It does, in the sense that, thermoplastic is installed by the contractor. It's not, there's different kinds of thermoplastic. There's one that you spray, which I think is the concern here, and there's another one that's preformed tape that you just buy, and it has the glass beads for reflectivity and everything else. I don't think that's what we're talking about, though, Jason. So really the question is, when people drive I-19 at night, can they see the striping sufficiently? And maybe I'll say what I think I know about it, but I'd love to be corrected if somebody sees it differently. You know, ADOT, as you mentioned, Jason, has standards for reflectivity. They have them on their standard specs. They also have them on other specs, store specs, that actually apply to this job. It looks to me like the striping here failed to meet those, but big part of the reason why it might have failed is because the device that they used to measure it was out of calibration or did not have a valid calibration. So I think the letter from the people who installed the striping had a lot of valid points on, you know, being out of calibration, them not being present for portions of the installation and all those things. I still would like to see, okay, and let me back up. I also know that ADOT standards are generally higher than, for instance, some things that have been discussed nationally for the MUTCD for reflectivity. I would like to see two things, and maybe ADOT can comment on this. One is, beyond the visual inspection, has there ever been a discussion of actually going out there and measuring the retroreflectivity again? or what people at Federal Highway sometimes recommend is that you compare portions of the striping that met the reflectivity standard with portions that don't meet the standard to see if there's a significant difference. So I'd like to see if either one of those things have been done to protect the public in this case.
Can I address, this is Michael Yao, can I address some of the questions you just raised?
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay, the thermoplastic issue, I've been doing this for over 30 years. I started out with ADOT in 1988, worked there for about 10 years. I've been a consultant for over 20 years. Lots of projects, different types of projects, vertical SkyTrain as well as horizontal projects. The issue with the thermoplastic is, from my perspective, being a resident engineer for a long time as well as other positions associated above that and whatever, the striping goes down, it's a thermoplastic, it goes down hot, and it's shot with beads on top. You have two different size beads. In this issue, the subcontractor had an issue, the beads were not falling properly, and they were not, and you don't get the reflectivity. There is a reflectometer that's done, and it had not been calibrated. Does not mean it was not in calibration, because when it was calibrated after the fact, it found out that it was not out of calibration. So the calibration issue goes away, as far as I'm concerned. They went out, they had the opportunity, the subcontractor, to be there during the testing. They were informed when we were going to do it. Ashton likes to push the testing to the limit, which means that there, you have like a 30-day limit, I can't remember exactly the time frame, to go back in and do the reflective testing. They like to push it out as far as they can. They did that. So we went out, my inspectors went out, did the reflectivity test. Subcontractor didn't show up till, I don't know, later on in the morning. We started at like 4 in the morning to get out there ahead of traffic, etc., and they can also do a visual when they're out. So this, and the letter that they wrote to me was total garbage. It was written by someone who's, if you read it, it makes no sense. But anyway, he went out after they were there and did some of his own testing with his own equipment. And if you use his equipment, you still are in about, instead of 40% reject, you're in about 38% reject. So the difference between his reflectometer and the one we were using, to me, is a moot point. And that's just part of the equipment, and that is statistically doesn't mean a lot. So this stuff was in reject, and my inspector said there, it was visually missing the glass bead. The issue I have, but there's two other projects that were striped at the same time, had the same issue. This one was never retested, which they could have done at any time, and they could do it today if they wanted to, but they did not do that. They wanted this to go away. It's about $65,000 worth of stripe. It should have been restriped, which is what the spec says, and that's by specification, and that's why they do these construction bulletin so that everybody does it the same way, because you have a lot of different products all over the place, and the department puts out these bulletins so that everybody's pretty consistent with what is done, especially with an item like this. And there are three construction bulletins concerning this material. So it is an issue material. So the fact that it was never retested and could have been retested. The letter that you saw said there was oil. Well, there's not oil on 16 miles of edge line stripe. This is edge line stripe. This is not center line. The center line was taped, which is what the gentleman that spoke just before me brought up. That was taped, and that's accepted by certification.
Mr. Yao, could you please describe what edge line is?
Edge line is the outside stripe. You have a center line stripe, and you have an edge line stripe. So the edge line is on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side of the lane.
What color is
it? It's in yellow. Okay, the left side is yellow, which goes toward your median. The right side is white. Yellow means that you can't cross it. The white is an edge line on the other side. Center lines, typically on freeway, is all white because you can't because you can change lanes. If it was a two-way roadway, you'd have center line yellow. So and there's different reflectivity for the different colors. So you have a little bit, the yellow doesn't, is a little bit different, but basically it's all the same. This one was never retested, and it was never restriped. To this day, it has not been restriped. The other two projects were restriped. One of them, the SR-86 job, was about 80% in reject. That one was restriped. There was another project that I don't remember where it was at, and it was also in reject, and it was restriped. But because the district did not want to deal with Ashton, they did not restripe this project. And the partnering stuff, you can talk about that all this. That is a mechanism for a conversation. It's not spec. Tells you how to work it. I started the partnering program in 1991. When it first came out. So I'm very familiar with it. Did my own partnering stuff. I was also a facilitator. I've been doing the partnering for however many years that adds up to. So the partnering issue, to me, you can talk about it all you want, but it's just a mechanism to be able to work with a contractor. You can make decisions with it. It gets escalated. And that's, to me, that's a moot point for the whole thing. It has to do with now we have 16 miles of edge line strut on I-19. It is not reflective as per the spec.
This is Neil Jones, the architect. This is kind of out of my wheelhouse, but are you saying that we have the same subcontractor that did three different projects that are substandard?
That's correct.
And, well, what are we doing about that?
Well, that's what you need to ask the district.
Can I chime in, Neil?
What'd you say?
Can I respond?
One at a time, please, folks. Let's start with, I think Mr. Yao asked to respond. Is that correct? Or is that incorrect?
Pardon me?
Did you ask?
Yes, I did ask to respond.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd ask to respond to that. Typically, it's handled at the project level. And the other two projects, the resident engineer told them to restripe. They worked with the contractor, and the prime contractor had them restripe on both projects. As far as I know, I don't know specifically exactly, but I knew that both of them were restriped, and that had to do with the project level. Never got to the district. As far as I know, that may be incorrect. I can't tell you that. So, this project, because I didn't want to deal with it, it was never restriped. And it should have been.
Mr. Yauch, this is the chairman. I have a question for you. How long, what's the expectation for the reflectivity, that level of reflectivity? Does it degrade over time, or is it something that maintains its reflectivity for some longevity?
I don't know exactly how long, but there's a reason that we have specifications, and there's reasons that we put glass in it. I mean, if it was for 6 weeks, there's no reason to do it. So that question you're going to have to ask someone who gives you the technical issue of how long it should last. But being that it's an edge line stripe, it should last a lot longer than a center line.
So you don't know a spec?
Okay, let me ask you. I do not know the longevity, but let me explain this to you. These are edge stripes. They do not get traffic on. So the traffic on edge line is going to last is a lot less, and that reflectivity should last a lot longer than, say, a center line stripe that has a lot of traffic on it.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yes, speak? Please. Please, Dr. Angel.
Okay. So I think there's different questions here. One is, you know, who's at fault and who should pay for, you know, the fact that the striping was out of compliance? That question, I think, has been addressed in a variety of ways. I do think that regardless of whether the reflectometer later tested as being, you know, in calibration, it didn't meet the requirements of ADOT's construction bulletin. So in case of a claim by the contractor or a dispute, ADOT would have very little recourse in winning that discussion. So that's one issue, is who pays. The next question, again, is this safe for the traveling public? And that's a professional decision. We've had, for instance, projects where, you know, you test concrete for bridges
and it doesn't meet the spec for the strength. So you have an engineer verify if the bridge would still work with the lower strength concrete. In this case, somebody had to make a call as to whether the lower reflectivity pavement was still reflective enough for safety out there. And I think that's what the district engineer ended up doing it. I mean, this is, he owns that decision now, and he's responsible for it. So if a non-registrant had overruled the registrant, that would be one thing. But this is a case of a registrant in a position of authority taking ownership of that. So I think he's in his purview to do that, to, you know, overrule the RE's decision. I would also note that ADOT's reflectivity standards are higher than what, again, what the MUTCD doesn't have a requirement right now, but what's been discussed, and the current reflectivity for this project is higher than what's on the older ADOT specifications as well. And, you know, the reflectivity does vary over time, so ADOT has a maintenance program to refresh striping that should consider the reflectivity of these stripes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Lane. Can I address some of these issues?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Rod Lane. I'm the district engineer for the South Central District. So there were a couple of points made that I would like to address. First of all, the calibration of the reflectometer. One of the attachments that I sent in my response was attachment G. And if you look at the second page of attachment G, it gives the results of the reflectometer when it was brought in to be tested beyond the testing date. Beyond the requirement date, and you'll see in there that it was received to be recalibrated. When it was received in, it was out of specification at that point. So you're right in the sense we don't know when it actually went out of the specification, but we do know that when it was brought in to be recalibrated, it was not correct, and it was brought in within a month or so or a couple of months after the striping was done out. The other issue that was brought up was how long does the reflectivity and the testing, use of the reflectivity, how long is it valid? And typically the standard specifications say about 30 days. And, you know, there may be a little discussion there about whether the traffic goes over the edge line stripe and whether it really reflects, really gets covered up. But the fact of the matter is it's in the weather. The oils from the vehicles that drive by get washed off over that. So the reflectivity does degrade. I wouldn't say degrade. It gets covered up by dirt and things like that. That's why the standard practice is 30 days. You have that 30-day window to do the reflectivity. And the third point I wanted to bring up was all of these issues, the testing, when it's tested, the calibration of the machine, how the inspectors are behaving in the field, and so on. Those are all issues that are in the purview of the resident engineer and supposedly in his role he's supposed to do. You know, part of the resident engineer's role is to see that the inspectors have the correct equipment, to see that equipment is used properly, to see that equipment is calibrated properly. And to see that the specifications are required and met. You know, we've already determined here that the specification numbers that were provided are tenuous and a struggle to accept, which is one of the reasons why we went and I went towards a nighttime inspection, which is what Dr. Angel was saying. That's kind of the foreground. If you can see it at night and it reflects well, somebody's going to have to make the call to move forward. And without the proper documentation from the resident engineer's level, it's really up to the next level of decision-making to do that. So that's kind of where we are. I just wanted to make sure that the board had the view from my where I sit. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Is there any board member on the phone that has anything they want to add to the issue or any specific questions?
This is Mike. Yeah, can I make one comment about the reflectometer?
Yes, sir.
The reflectometer is owned by the district engineer. It also does not sit in my office. It belongs to the traffic people who do the striping for the district, as well as assigning a striping group. And it is up to them to keep the equipment calibrated. So to say that it was my responsibility to calibrate their equipment, that piece of equipment belongs to ADOT and is under the direction of the district engineer. So the fact that it was in calibration or not calibration belongs to, not to me. Am I to keep track of all the calibration of all the equipment that comes out of the district that I'm using? I don't think that that's justifiable.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yock. Remember, you're the alleger here, not the respondent, so we're not looking at your practices here.
All right, thank you.
Dr. Angel, do you have anything you want to add to this?
No, I mean, if we want to have more discussion, we can. I would, otherwise, I would make a motion. I'll preface the motion by saying that I think there's two different issues. One was, you know, who should pay, and the other one is, you know, is it safe? I think the who should pay is, you know, ADOT's dealing with it. The question in front of us is it safe for the public, and was the decision made appropriately to keep the striping and not restripe, regardless of who paid for it? I think, you know, it's within the district engineer's responsibility to review those, you know, the requests from the contractor. I do finding a little concerning that, some people from ADOT were reluctant to speak up on this case, so I don't know if that's a, you know, a specific issue within an org or a, you know, organizational or whatever, but I just think it'd be good if people felt more comfortable speaking up, because that was noted on the investigator's notes. Besides that, I think I would move that we dismiss the case. I don't think there's any evidence of lack of skill or of, not meeting the standard of care.
So, Alejandro, this is Neil Jones. You don't think a letter of concern should be issued at this in this point?
I would have to understand what the letter of concern is about.
Let me interrupt. I'll make a second so we can continue discussion. So I second Dr. Angel's motion to dismiss. Now we can have the discussion.
Well, that was just my question for Dr. Angel. I thought a letter was in
Neil,
order.
I'd like to understand what the letter of concern would be about.
Not sure. That's why I'm asking you.
I think I'd like to see maybe is. Yeah. The only thing I would have liked to have seen is ADOT being more proactive.
It just seems like there's some valid points being made by the alleger here. And it seems like we're overlooking that. But this is in your wheelhouse, not mine.
Well, I'd like to add that we're not dealing with a highway bridge here. We're not dealing with drainage structures. We're talking about road stripes that may or may not be out of spec. And this is an extreme oversimplification, but I'm going to go there. I do work for a transportation agency. This is similar to mowing the grass. If you do a bad job mowing the grass, it's going to grow back next year, right? Yeah. They'll have a budget, or sometime in the future they'll have a budget to correct the problem. They'll do it with ADOT. They'll do it with whatever fiscal guidelines they can do it in. But it's, as we heard, the reflectivity may only last 30 days anyway. So it is a spec item, but it's not the end of the world when you consider ADOT's overall budget and the things they do to protect the public in every other way, too. So
reflectivity and
Mr. Chair,
last 30 days, how does that protect the public when it's day 31?
Wait, let me clarify.
Yes, please do.
So the reflectivity lasts well beyond 30 days.
It's just that you test within 30 days because that's when it's highest. It's like, you know, street lights, you know, the amount of light they put up degrades over time. Yeah. But you measure it when you install it, and then at some point they've reached their useful life and you replace them. The same with these. At some point, their reflectivity reduces to a point where you need to restripe. But it doesn't mean that after 30 days they don't have reflectivity. Okay. So that's important. I also think, you know, it might not be a bridge, but the owning agency can be open to significant liability for things as little as signs or striping. And, you know, ADOT knows that from previous court cases. If somebody were to have a, you know, serious crash here and it was related to the lack of reflectivity and that could be proven, it could be problematic. So, the only thing I'm concerned about here is I would like ADOT to have been more proactive in either restriping at their own cost or verifying reflectivity some other way to make sure that, not necessarily that it meets specs, because you can be below spec but still be safe, but verify that it's safe for travelers.
I agree with that.
I think that's a great point, Dr. Angel, as well.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Brazelton. May I make just a couple brief comments regarding these allegations of noncompliance?
Yes, please do.
I apologize for jumping in the middle of your discussion on the motion, but there seems to be a sense or a consensus amongst a number of the board members that the allegations that Mr. Yauch is making that this thermoplastic simply was not in compliance are true, period. But there's no evidence in the record to support it. He had two ways that he could have pursued this in order to justify or establish that he's correct in his allegation. One is through the escalation ladder, where he could have taken his allegation of noncompliance up and insisted that it be made a determination within the department and that they then order for thermoplastic to be replaced. He didn't do that. Secondly, he took the video and he didn't pursue that either. So he comes in here today and he says, well, it's noncompliant 40%, and everybody seems to be just accepting that. But what I'm saying is that the record that you've been provided, the inspector who was there at the time the thermoplastic was put in, Mr. Rick Stoll, says on a day-by-day chart that when there was incorrect installation of the thermoplastic, it was replaced. That's what the record reflects. The statements from Mr. Yauch are completely unsupported. So I just ask that you give that consideration when you're concerned about whether there was any danger to the traveling public here.
Thank you for that perspective.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion from the board on this matter? If not, we have a motion and a second to dismiss this case. Kurt, we'll go ahead and do the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Nay.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried with one nay.
Okay, so the motion was dismissed, and that concludes the case, P-20-017, agenda item 598. Thank you all for all who called in on this case.
Thank you. I'll sign off now. Thank you.
Okay, I need to take a break. I'm going to call a recess here. Does anybody have a preference of time? 10 minutes, 15? 10-minute recess. We'll reconvene at 11 o'clock. And we are back in session. The next item, enforcement item I have is 5C2, and the alleger, Axel Olson, is on the phone. Is that correct, Mr. Olson? Are you there?
Yes, this is Axel Olson. I am on the phone.
Okay, this is 5C1?
2.
C2.
5C2, I'm sorry.
So he's the alleger.
Okay, so 5C2, the respondent is Robert Harold. He's a certified home inspector. The complaint, on or about October 30th, 2019, board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to report on adverse condition of the air distribution duct work and failed to accurately report on the amount of insulation in the attic while conducting a home inspection at 956 West La Jolla Drive in Tempe, Arizona, on or about June 10th. The synopsis of the complaint, the investigative conclusion is that the respondent has violated ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AACR 43301.01, and that the respondent failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors. The staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, restitution in the amount of $355, administrative penalty in the amount of $250, cost of investigation for $411, and we do have a signed consent agreement in front of us.
Is Mr. Harold on the phone?
Is the respondent on the phone, Mr. Harold?
I didn't get an indication that he's going to...
Okay, so Mr. Olson, I'll open the floor up to you, and please keep in mind that we do have a signed consent agreement here in front of us.
Sure. This is Axel Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Board. I might clarify, I apologize for my ignorance in the process, but I know this went through the Enforcement Advisory Committee, and they had the recommendation that went through. I attended that meeting, and it seemed that most of the kind of violations or things that were noted in that meeting were in regards to certain other points that were not covered in the overall home inspector's report. Could I ask for a clarification on the 2 points that I initially brought into AZBTR about the ductwork and insulation, what their determination was on those?
Yes, sir. I will open the floor to the investigator.
So the allegation came in as...
can't hear you.
Yeah. Much louder. You have to get to this microphone here.
Just turn it on. State your name for the record, too, please.
Orlene Laura, investigator. So the allegations came in, and we had an EAC for them, and then in the EAC, the EAC members concluded that he responded... did the minimum standards regarding those. Through the assessment process, there was reporting violations found, and those is what you have in front of you, entering the consent agreement. So the allegations were unsubstantiated through the EEC.
Unsubstantiated, okay.
So the two that I initially brought to you were unsubstantiated. I apologize. It's a little quiet, so it's hard for me to hear that. Okay. If I may talk about those two allegations that I brought in. And so my understanding is the ductwork was found to be unsubstantiated because they found that the openings that were noted in the Ideal Energy report that I provided were on the far side of the attic and therefore obstructed from the point of view of the home inspector from the attic access opening. Also just wanted to call to attention that there were three openings on the far side of the attic. While I disagree with the assessment that they were not readily accessible, there was also an ductwork opening that was at ductwork about 2 feet away from the attic access opening north edge. So there was a clearly unobstructed, visible opening that you can see on page 2 of the Ideal Energy report. I'm not sure if you have that immediately in front of you at the moment, but there was multiple openings. I believe most of the EAC focused on the ones that were on the far side of the attic, and I wanted to call attention to the one that was immediately at the attic access opening that I believe met all criteria for being readily accessible and readily observable. Also regarding the attic insulation, there was multiple indicators that the attic insulation was not 9 inches deep, which would indicate an R30 insulation, as was indicated on the report, the Stratton home inspection report. It was indicated on page, and I apologize, I have a few documents in front of me, I can tell you the page number. On the Stratton home inspection report, page 72, line item 197, it was indicated that the insulation was approximately R30 or more. On the ideal energy report, you can see on page, page 7, that the blown-in cellulose average depth was less than or was 5 inches. And there's a photo in that report as well, the tape measure measuring exactly 5 inches immediately outside the attic access opening. So as a first-time home buyer, I get the home inspection report from Stratton, which on page 69 indicates the visible distribution ducts were properly installed in acceptable condition. And I get a on page 72 that the depth of the attic insulation was approximately R30 or greater, which shortly following after that with an ideal energy inspection that there's multiple openings and the insulation was well below that, and both of those pieces of information could have been determined with what was available visible from the attic access opening. And so that was something I wanted to bring to the board's attention, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Do any of the board members have any comments or questions of the alleger? Okay, I don't hear anything on the phone. I'm just going to do a quick check of the phone. Carmen, are you there?
Yes.
Jean, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you. Andy, are you there?
I'm here.
Clarence, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just want to double check with the architects on the phone. Everybody's comfortable with what they've heard thus far in this case?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'll entertain any motions that the board wants to make.
Mr. Chair, this is Neil Jones, architect. I would make a motion that we accept staff's, accept the signed consent agreement as stated.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I will second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the signed consent agreement. Is there any further discussion on the matter? Hearing none, let's do the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel. Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes the case. Mr. Olson, thank you for your time and your attention to the matter. We did accept the signed consent agreement. And that concludes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman of Board.
Okay, that concludes 6C2, agenda item 5C, I'm sorry, agenda 5C2. We'll move on to item 5C3, which is, we have two people on the phone. Renee Martinez-Flores, are you on the phone? Shanks Leonhard, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Apparently the respondent is not on the phone. We're not hearing from the respondent.
I'm here.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? This is Shanks Linhart.
I hear Mr. Linhart.
I need to...
Yeah, can you hear me?
Who's me?
Renee?
Go, Renee.
Renee. That's Dr. Martinez.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Renee Martinez.
Okay, just give me a second here to get into my packet. This is 5C3. Okay, this is item 5C3. It's case number P19-066. The respondent is Renee Martinez, PE, 47518. Synopsis of the complaint is that the respondent prepared, signed, and sealed special inspection reports related to the construction of an outdoor fireplace that failed to conform with approved drawings of the IBC and did not reflect the actual conditions of the built structure. It is further alleged that the respondent and Talavera Engineering Construction, the respondent firm, special inspection reports refer to the drawings that showed an approved date months after the special inspection report date and approved drawings for the fireplace may not have been available during the construction of the fireplace. The investigative conclusion is that the respondent has violated Board Statute ARS 32128C2 and that the respondent and respondent firm engaged in gross negligence, incompetence, or other misconduct while providing professional services to the public. This investigation concludes that the respondent has violated ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R433014 in that the respondent failed to comply with state, municipal, county codes, ordinances, and other regulations pertaining to his area of practice. This investigation concludes that the respondent has violated Board Statute ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R433014. 3016 and that the respondent failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill in the practice of a board-regulated profession. The investigation also concludes that the respondent has violated Board Statutes ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R433016 and that the respondent signed and sealed professional documents not prepared by himself or his bona fide employee. Staff recommendation is accept the signed consent agreement encompassing the following order and extend the time given originally to the respondent to take the NCEES structural engineering exam from April 20th to October 2020. NCEES canceled the April exam because of coronavirus. The next scheduled exam is in October of 2020. So we have a signed consent agreement and we're looking for a modification to correspond with the current NCEES COVID condition. Is that correct, Mr. Parlin?
Yes, Chair, the change is incorporated into the signed consent agreement. So the only difference between this consent agreement and the one the board originally offered is the change in the date of the structural engineering. Exactly.
Okay. Mr. Linhart, I'll open the floor up to you if you have any comments.
Mr. Chair, no comments for myself. Just happy to answer any questions, but we did, Dr. Martinez and I did speak on this particular matter back at the January 28th board meeting. So unless there's any other questions, I don't have any comment. I'll let Dr. Martinez speak for himself if he has any comments.
Mr. Martinez?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's the same. I don't have any comments. Just waiting for the solution for this.
Okay. Any discussion from the board or any motions?
Chair, I'll make a motion that we accept the signed consent, but with modification for the testing from April 2020 to October 2020.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to accept the signed consent agreement that does reflect the change due to the NCEES COVID restrictions. Is there any further discussion from the board? Okay, hearing no further discussion, Kurt, let's do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, for the folks on the phone, the board did accept the signed consent agreement with the modifications, and that concludes this case, which is...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. That's okay. Agenda item 5C3. So before we move on to 5C4, I'd just like to acknowledge that on case P20030, apparently one of the folks on the phone, and I believe it was the alleger, was on mute and could not get off of mute. I think that at this point we won't be reopening the discussion, and that we are exercising our discretion to move ahead without comments from the alleger. Is everybody comfortable with that, or does anybody want to go back and revisit that case, that particular case, which is P2030, which was the Natupski case, the structural engineer, in its 5A2. Is there anybody that wants to go back and revisit, or is everybody comfortable with moving ahead without the alleger's comments? Let's do a quick roll call on that, Kurt.
I guess say yes or no.
Move ahead or not?
Revisit?
If you wish to revisit, say yes. If you do not, say no. Jack Gilmore.
No.
Neil Jones.
No.
Jason Foose.
No.
Clarence McAllister.
No.
Carmen Wyckoff.
No.
Stephen Knoll.
No.
Andrew Everode.
No.
Eugene Montgomery.
No.
It's all no.
Okay, thank you, folks. We just wanted to have that clarification on the record. Okay, so we'll move on to agenda item 5C4. Is Seth Doubler on the phone? Double on the phone? Okay, Seth Double is the alleger. Again, we have a similar case where I'm going to assume that maybe there's a mute issue here. This person intended to call in, but we don't hear this person. We're going to move ahead, acknowledging that we don't hear this person. So we're at item 5C4. This is case P20037. And the respondent is Robert Phillips, RLS, 45495. The synopsis of the complaint is: on February 6, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, after being contracted to conduct a land survey for the above reference project, and being paid in full $1,400, failed to provide a record of survey and has not responded to the client's request to produce a record of survey or refund the payment for services. It was also alleged that the respondent firm engaged in the practice of land surveying without firm registration with the board. Board records show that the respondent firm had not been registered since July 27, 2011. The investigative conclusions are that the respondent has violated statute ARS 32141, and that the respondent firm practice or offer to practice a board-regulated profession without a firm registration. Respondent demonstrated a good level of cooperation through the register, through the investigation, and displayed a willingness to comply with the board's practice act. The staff recommendation is accept the respondent's signed consent agreement encompassing the following order: the administrative penalty in the amount of $750, the cost of investigation in the amount of $129, compliance with renewals of individual and firm registration. We do have a signed consent agreement here. Is the respondent on the phone?
No invitation was sent, as none was requested.
Okay, Mr. Phillips is not on the phone. And we apparently don't have the alleger either. So we're going to move ahead with this unless somebody objects. And I hear no objections. So I'm looking for a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Neil Jones. I make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement as written.
This is Jack Gilmore. I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, let's do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. The motion's carried. That concludes agenda item 5C4, case number P20037. That is the end of the sign-up sheet. And I'm not sure that I kept really good notes here. We've done, Kirk, can you help me out with this? We've got...
I've got a question.
Oh, okay.
We've got 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 2. 3, 4.
As far as I can see, you've gone down everyone on the list and every item's been touched upon.
All right, so we'll move on to the next item numerically is 5A3.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could ask if it would behoove you to consent several of these, if I could make a motion to do that, am I in my purview?
Please do.
I have some mistakes. I think some are administratively closed and some are to dismiss. I don't know if you can.
Good point, Kurt.
I would like to make a motion. The first motion I would like to make is to dismiss cases 5A4, 6, and 7, and 8. I'm holding back on 5A3 because I would like Melissa to speak to that particular one.
Sure, if it's appropriate, I'd like to second that motion. Hopefully those can be all dismissed.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss items 5A, 4, 6, 7, and 8. Okay. Any discussion?
Are we all dismissed?
Administratively closed. The 8 cases are to be administratively closed.
Okay, so
I change my motion to
dismiss or
accept the order to administratively close 5A4, 6, 7, and 8.
I'll modify my second to Paul O'Neill's motion. Second.
Okay, so we have a modification to dismiss or
is dismissal.
Okay. There's confusion here.
It says dismissal or administrative closure.
To dismiss or administratively close.
Let's grab some order here. I'd like to hear from our representative here, Scott.
Then, Mr. Chair, may I suggest that the board amend the motion to either close or dismiss the cases indicated as recommended by staff in the board packet?
Right.
I'd like to amend my motion by accepting staff's recommendation to dismiss or administratively close the following cases, 5A, 4, 6, 7, and 8.
I'll second that, Chair, please.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to accept staff's recommendation to dismiss or administratively close cases 5A, 4, 6, 7, and 8. Okay, any discussion from those folks on the phone? Hearing none, roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Poos.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Those cases were dismissed or administratively closed. We'll move on to item 5A3. Mr. Jones, do you have something you want to lead off with on that case?
Well, this has been a huge issue for the board over the last year or so. It goes back even further in Carmen and my case, but Melissa, would you like to tell us what happened here?
Certainly. It's my understanding that a day after the board reached consensus with Mr. Robichaud's attorney, Doug Folk, Mr. Robichaud, in fact, passed away. So he was not obviously able to sign the board's offered consent agreement, which is why it's back on this agenda for you to consider administratively closing. There obviously cannot be a resolution once the individual who's the subject of the complaint has passed away. But for public health, safety, and welfare and protection going into the future, the board minutes and obviously the offered consent agreement would be public record, and should anyone want to review or question what the board did in terms of making an attempt to resolve this case in the public's interest, that I believe that record will be available.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. So I will make the motion that we administratively close case P18037, and our sympathies go out to the family of the decedent.
I'll second that.
Clarence McAllister, second that motion.
Thank you. We've got a motion and a second. Kurt, let's do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Poos.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes all the 5A items. We'll move on to 5B1, complaint for proposed resolution by letter of concern. This is case number HI 20021, and it's agenda items 5B1.
Mr. Chair, this is Neil Jones. I'd like to make the motion to accept the staff's recommendation to issue a letter of concern for case 5B1.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion from the folks on the phone? Hearing none, let's do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Poos.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. That concludes the item 5B items. We'll move on to item 5C1, cases P-19078 and P-20010. Gary Holkinson, Registered Architect, 51987. This is a complaint proposed for resolution with a signed consent agreement.
Chair, this is Neil Jones. I would like to make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement on case 5C1.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion, or does anybody need to look into this case or want to express anything regarding this case?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Gene Montgomery. I was just concerned at the level of remediation needed by this architecture to continue practicing. It seems to be quite severe. I understand he's under state suspension for a period of time, but I'm wondering if somebody should review his work.
Thank you, Gene. Does anybody have any comments with Gene's thoughts there?
John Thacker is here. Perhaps he would like to weigh in.
I'm available.
Sean Thacker's in the room.
The question was from Mr. Montgomery whether the board should consider peer review for this respondent's work.
I thought there was a peer review in this one.
No.
Within the consent agreement? Your education?
Remedial education.
Yeah. I don't see any peer review, Sean.
Yeah, the EAC on this one was really heavy in regards to the education, so that's why we just stuck with the education.
What does that mean? What's remedial education mean?
It means he has to go through his training. It's given to him. It's within the consent agreement. It's IBC, International Building Code, IRC, International Resident Code, IECC, International Energy Code.
Okay. I get that. I'm okay with that. So,
I was just surprised at the level of incompetence. I mean, to the mandate that he take remediation on all these basic codes, it leads one to believe, what is he qualified to do at all?
So everybody has a different interpretation of the code book. I'm certainly not an expert.
If I may pick on the architects on the phone, Clarence, do you have anything that jumps out at you on this case regarding? I'm sorry.
No, not at this time.
Okay. Carmen?
No, nothing jumps out. I'm glad the education is part of it.
Okay. And Clarence, my apologies for misidentifying you as an architect.
Fighting words.
Fighting words.
He'll take the compliment.
No problem.
Okay. Sean, I don't have the consent in the packet. How long do we give this gentleman to complete all his education?
So, I think it's 6 months. So state suspension probation goes for 6 months, so that's the line we'd stick with.
Page 1630. Yeah, I don't know.
My apologies.
Okay.
Ms. Director.
I don't know.
Okay, so we are at we're at a motion and a second, correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, can I ask for some clarification then on the terms of the consent agreement? He has a state suspension on his license, but yet he has an assurance of discontinuance to not press. So the practice is not pertaining to his architectural practice, but to his ability to practice engineering as defined by ARS 32101B?
Correct, Gene. Within the actual EAC, we found that he was practicing engineering and he didn't actually perform to board standards. The EAC was very...
I saw that in the documentation. All right.
So he will be unable to practice engineering.
Well, certainly that. I guess the question, of course, is as to whether he continues to be qualified to practice architecture.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Again, it's my personal opinion, given the severity of the multiple complaints against him, that at least one or two designs should require a peer review by another licensed architect. But I guess if that's felt not to be warranted, then that's why it's not in the consent agreement.
Well, the extra education then would hopefully offset that or compensate to some degree.
Mr. Backer, were the violations primarily following codes? Is that why it's focused on codes?
Codes came up as a second issue within the EAC. We don't really handle those, but the EAC was pretty concerned with it. Our problem was the fact he didn't provide the plans that were correct, and he wasn't providing things in a timely manner.
Yeah.
He'd go off radar. Those were the main issues that we came into, him taking the money and not performing the work. And that's how we started off this case. And we led into all these code violations within the EAC.
I think they didn't stamp all the MEP drawings, too.
Yes.
Mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, that's incredible.
Yeah, and that came up during the EAC and was the issue.
Yeah.
So I'm just concerned about, is his practice unsafe to the public?
Well, I think, Gene, for your benefit, not being here, I'm looking at Neil making some gestures. Neil, you need to enunciate your thoughts for Gene's benefit.
Well, I have a whole list of notes here. I mean, yeah, he's not one of our better ones practicing out there. Just a whole list of things in the report.
That's what I'm asking. I mean, is it unorthodox to ask that that his work be peer reviewed by another licensed officer? That's all.
Yeah, it's not unorthodox.
I guess.
Okay. Sounds reasonable to me, Gene.
So mechanically, we're at a point, Neil, where you made a motion. You would be the.
Yep.
It wasn't me.
The other one. Okay, so if we're going to follow Gene's lead on this, we'll have to amend the motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend my motion to include peer review in the consent agreement, the signed consent agreement.
Well, you'd have to amend.
Again, to be signed within 30 days.
Okay, so you want to reject this offer and offer a modified consent to include peer review in addition to all the previously offered terms.
Yes.
Is that a peer review for 6 months or two projects? Or
right. That's up to you.
It doesn't have to be, I mean, because it could be quite expensive for the practitioner, but, at least one or two projects should be peer reviewed to give us an assurance that he's safe to practice.
Okay. And architectural projects.
Yes, he cannot no longer perform any engineering for New York.
Well, for sure, no engineering, but I would say three projects is reasonable.
Okay.
And we don't know what size those are. We don't know the complexity of them. I don't know this gentleman.
Okay.
So I don't know how to put it in words, but of some size and complexity, the three projects. I don't know how to put it in words.
Architectural,
but something besides design in a chair or a bench. You know, something that has a substantial. What'd you say, Carmen?
A substantial scope.
Commercial project.
Substantive. He may not do commercial projects. Maybe
substantial scope. He is mostly a residential architect.
Okay.
Can you put a value on the construction? Say, at least?
Or the size?
40,000?
Commercial or residential?
Commercial or residential.
Of substantial scope. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to modify my motion to include within the consent agreement to be signed in 30 days that the respondent be subjected to peer review of both commercial and residential architectural projects of substantial scope. I'm going to rescind that because substantial scope is subjective. I don't know really what that means, so I would say just the commercial architecture and residential projects of any size.
Now, would you say beyond remodeling, it would need to be an actual residence or building?
Nope, it could be remodeling.
Does that read right to you?
Yep, looks good. I think that's broad enough.
Okay, Mr. Gilmore, are you able to?
Yeah, I'd like to modify my previous second to reflect Mr. Jones' current motion.
Okay, so we have a modification to the motion and a modification to the second. The motion right now reads, reject signed consent agreement and add peer review for the next three architectural projects, residential or commercial of any size, and offer to the respondent to be signed in 30 days or move to hearing. I want to point something out. This does not sound clear to me because it sounds like we may be forgetting everything that happened in the consent agreement. Am I missing that? Am I misreading that?
We're just adding this
to it. Do we need to say everything that's in the former consent agreement and this new stuff?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may clarify for the board, were it to say to reject the signed consent agreement and offer a consent agreement with the same terms and the addition of peer reviews for the next year architectural projects, et cetera, et cetera?
Second.
Well, I can't actually make that motion.
You did a great job.
Okay. So, Neil, you've modified your language to say the following. Reject signed consent agreement and offer consent agreement with the same terms, but with the addition of peer review for the next three architectural projects, residential or commercial of any size, and offer to the respondent to be signed in 30 days or move to formal hearing. That's the amended motion. Do we have an amendment to the second?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'd like to make the amend my previous second to reflect this current motion by Mr. Jones.
Okay, so we have an amended motion and amended second. Is there any further discussion from the folks on the phone? Hearing none, let's go to the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes item 6C1. And I believe that concludes all enforcement matters up through C. We'll go on to item D, 5D, which is review and approval of appointment for EAC membership for Dennis Rogers, registered architect, 28523. And I'd be looking for a motion on that.
Chairman, I move we approve him.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion to approve and a second. Let's go ahead and do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes 5D1. Let's go to 5E1. Case number P20028. This is Paul Stover, registered architect. The reference is a felony conviction. Synopsis of the complaint is that on November 18th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that on or about September 5th, 2019, respondent was convicted of two counts of aggravated assault, a Class 3 felony, in Maricopa County Court. And the case number is cited in the document. The investigative conclusions are none. Staff recommendation is to consider whether to proceed with a formal hearing or append until license renewal. And I will step forth and I will say that my preference would be to pend until license renewal until the matter is resolved in the Maricopa County Court.
Oh, he's in prison.
He's in prison.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
So the matter is?
Resolved.
Resolved, okay.
Andy, do you have any comments on this?
No, it's legal.
Was that to me, Neil?
You're the only Andy I know. I'm just saying it's...
You broke up when you said the name.
Yeah, Pine Top has the time there. Anyway, he's in prison. Again, this is not in what I do. Do you have any comments on what we can do about this? When somebody's in prison, we can't get to him.
I don't know, Neil. I don't have any experience with dealing with folks in prison.
Okay. Well, the purpose of the hearing would be to suspend his license?
Or revoke it based on the criminal behavior. And the reason, by way of some background, this is back on your agenda, was because it had been on in February, and I had concern that the board was basically sending this case back to investigation to wait for some form of action. The individual is in prison for the next year and a half at least, and the AG's office thought it would be best to pend any enforcement action against his license until he left prison, because let me know if you feel...
It would be a little bit different. It wouldn't be necessarily pending an enforcement action until he gets out. It would be a matter of there isn't necessarily an enforcement action because there isn't necessarily a violation of Practice Act or board statutes. but this is behavior that can be considered when his license comes back up for renewal and the board is considering a renewal application. The board will be able to consider this behavior. So it's a matter of how the board would be looking at the information. The acts taken would not necessarily constitute a basis for a violation, but they certainly do count as material that the board will be able to consider in determining whether to approve or deny any application, including an application for renewal of an existing license. Just from a time frame standpoint, the application for renewal will come up, I believe, prior to the gentleman being released from prison.
So what you're saying is when it does come up for renewal, that's when we can rule on this.
Well, it's a matter of this is information that would be relevant in a board consideration of whether to approve or deny an application.
Right.
So this is material the board will be able to consider.
So it's like I get the applications. So when I get his application, if I'm still on the board.
You would not get this application because he's already licensed, which is my point, and that is, I believe, and I'm not the board's lawyer, so take it as you will, that we have jurisdiction over this individual because he's a registered architect. Now, his firm is not registered, and we don't know if he's actually practicing architecture from prison. He may or may not be. I think the intent of your statutes has always been to consider whether people have good moral character and the ability to practice safely. I think the definition, the rules in this case establish that we have to consider that. Mm-hmm. But do we do that now while he's in prison, or do we do it when he comes up for license renewal? The burden of proof probably shifts to away from the state to when he's up for license renewal, it's his burden to establish that he has the good moral character. And I think what the AG is saying is that we have a stronger case there than we would now trying to establish the nexus between a criminal conviction between, you know, for a drug crime and aggravated assault for passengers in a vehicle, okay. Then, you know, that would be a harder burden. Okay. Is that fair?
That would be a fair way of putting it, yes. Yeah, it would be important for the board to remember it's definitely not a sort of a matter of getting anybody. It's a matter of looking at how their behavior jives with different areas of the board statutes and whether it's an investigation matter or whether it's a good character necessary for renewal in an application matter.
Well, I agree with Melissa's recommendation. I think this is something that we should vote to pend until he comes out and then put the burden on him to show that he's
how we know his license is up for renewal.
Well, it's on the computer system for renewals, so.
But how does he know? Does he have access to information when you're in prison? Personally, I've never been in prison before.
Right.
That we know of.
But you know
that when you know of.
When you know your license is up for renewal.
Can't talk, speak for her. But.
We do remind individuals when their licenses are up for renual. So.
How's he going to get the information?
It's up to him to keep his address current with the board.
It's the registrar's responsibility to ensure the board can communicate with them. The board doesn't have any positive responsibility to ensure they communicate regardless of the circumstances.
Okay.
Yeah. Assistant says he expires September 30th, 2021.
So that notice would go out to him in March, right, Kurt? May?
Yeah. No, for September, he would probably be July,
okay. So, it's up to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Chair, I'd like to make a motion to follow the staff recommendation that this application or this case be pended. Is that the right term?
Yeah, that's fine.
Until such time that he is released from prison? Or until his license,
Is up for renewal.
Is up for renewal. Okay. Thank you.
Melissa, do you want to keep this case open?
I don't want to, honestly, because it just ages. So I don't know how we should work. Do we administratively close it and consider it upon license renewal instead?
I think probably the cleanest thing would be to administratively close the case and then to have the board staff maintain this information in whatever file is kept for this registrant's renewal, because it is information that will be relevant to a determination at that point of whether the registrant has the appropriate qualifications for renewal of his license.
Okay, Chair, I'd like to amend that motion that this be administratively closed until such time that this registration comes up for license renewal.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to administratively close this case. All in favor? Well, let's do the roll call. Kurt?
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes item 5E1, and I believe that concludes all of the enforcement matters. We will move on to item 6, licensing matters. Discussion, consideration, and vote of the following. A. Glenn Stephen, Universal Licensure Application for Registrant as Architect, 200803.
Mr. Board, this is Neil Jones. I'd like to make a motion that accept the license application for registration for Stephen Glenn.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on this? Okay, there's no discussion. Let's do the roll call.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes item 6A. We'll move on to licensing consent agenda. Item 7A1, cancellations of registrations. Certifications that have been expired for one full renewal period. This is the time to look at your packet and review the names.
Scott, sorry to interrupt. Something like this, I'd like to talk to Robert about three of these registrants that are having their license canceled.
Sure.
Can do that afterwards.
You can. We can ask for Rob to come in if you want to speak to them.
Others, with the exception of those three, and hold those three out. Does it affect?
No. Just I think some of them, a couple of them, have passed away. I want to make sure that's correct.
So are those just personal questions,
yes,
or are they?
Okay.
All right. Okay, I believe we need a motion on this one. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're looking for a motion to accept and approve. Actually, you know what? I'll make the motion to accept and approve item 7A1, cancellation of registrations and certifications. That have been expired for one full renewal period.
Second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Item 7A2 is the review of the registrations granted by the Executive Director under law. And just take a quick peek at that.
That's a lot of large agents. See their license numbers. That's the one I'm most interested in.
Kurt, I noticed these were in triplicate on here on some of those. Is that just a
triplicate?
Yeah.
Yeah, the names showed up three times.
That's all right.
Yeah, there's like shown three of them, same number.
Sorry, that's Dolly had created this list and I didn't double check it, it looks like, but I would probably indicate that she used one that uses three addresses and then she just didn't
okay.
Filter right. out the names based off of that.
Okay.
But it's a granted list, so there's no...
Okay, so I presume everybody's had a chance to look at that, and if everybody's comfortable, I'll move on. We'll go to item 8, policy matters. Review and consideration possible action on the following. Item 8A is review and discuss pending legislation, discussion of various bills that may impact the board. And the profession regulates, and I think this is Patty's moment, isn't it?
Right now, there's still, once again, nothing to consider. They're still out of session. First, we heard that a group of conservative Republicans were successful in pushing their agenda to go back in session and continue with the bills, including our bills. However, that was followed up with new information. This is coming from the Capital Times. That there are as many or more Republicans who don't support that idea, who may say no. There are two in particular, Senators Carter and Boyer, who said that if they go back into session, they will not vote on bills, yes, on bills, that are not COVID-related. So right now, there's a stare down. Don't know where it's going quite yet, but as long, there's at least a stare down.
Yeah.
Okay, that's correct. That's
and we may know something by the end of the week. I mean, their plan was to be closed through April 30th, which was the date the governor established. So hopefully we'll hear something more by the end of the week to be able to give you more information after that.
Is Dougie going to extend this another 2 weeks for... social distancing?
I don't know. You probably know as much as I do. I know there have been protests down at the Capitol asking him to reopen. I think he's been hearing, obviously, from his cabinet agencies about how they're going to implement social distancing and other CDC guidance suggestions to ensure public protection. But we haven't heard what that plan is, and hopefully he'll announce that on Thursday.
So there are no official announcements?
Nothing yet. Okay. Nothing yet, more than what you probably know.
Okay. Saw Scott on TV.
You did, huh?
Protesting.
That's not agendized. Not agendized.
I did notice an alarm agent.
I was out of order. Is there anything else on the legislative or policy matters legislation?
Nothing.
Okay. We'll move on to item 9, Director's Report. Melissa?
First, I just want to say thank you all for your patience in dealing with Google Meets. I know it's difficult to appear telephonically and have your thoughts and your questions answered and addressed, so I do really appreciate the time. all of you put into reviewing the materials and participating, even with the technological and electronic challenges. I think we'll probably have to meet like this for the foreseeable future. I don't know how long that future will be, but certainly we're making every opportunity here, taking every opportunity to learn from this, and hopefully our next meetings, if they have to be electronic, will be easier. Jason?
Yeah, if I might interrupt, Melissa, just a comment to the board or a request to the board. If anybody has any ideas to make these run smoother, send them to Melissa. She can send them to me, and we'll do our best to support everybody the best that we can through this, especially the folks that are calling in.
Right.
So if you guys have anything that you want us to try or something that you think can go better, please state it to Melissa, and I'll accept anything. I'm up here winging it like you guys are.
Yep.
And if any of you had trouble getting unmuted, let us know what the wall was you ran into so we can try to figure out instructions for people in the future.
Yeah, we can certainly update the notice we send out. I think the obvious problems were Alejandro and Carmen had tried to call in on a phone that perhaps maybe didn't accommodate, but we'll work with everyone. I think everyone was able to be heard and to express their concerns about the various cases, so that's at least positive. We as staff did try to put cases on we thought would not be as confrontational as they were, but I think you handled it really well, and it certainly helped staff in terms of processing applications and closing complaints. So that's a good thing, and hopefully we won't be as far behind as I know some of our sister agencies will be, having had to cancel meetings because they couldn't accommodate appearances telephonically. So that's a good thing. Again, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for sine die May 1st. We'll see. So you know, the state has heard from the feds and is making adjustments for staff with regard to helping those who have children who need to be out in terms of daycare and leave that they need to take to help their children with school and leave, and I expect that will continue through the end of the year, as is the new federal Family Medical Leave Act has been amended to accommodate that. So,
come out of our budget?
Yes, it will. We still don't know what the budget implications of the pandemic have been. I have heard, and you probably all have as well, that we have already incurred a $1 billion deficit just in Arizona alone for the money and the resources necessary to deal with the pandemic. On the positive side, we all heard the governor say in his State of the State that we had a $1 billion surplus, so hopefully it's evening out, but we have no way of gauging that yet. And in fact, when you look at our budget, our agency budget looked fine, but they were actually March numbers, because I always report to you a month late. Our staff has seen a decrease, obviously, in the number of people walking into the agency and delivering applications and renewals to us, but we are still processing that information when we get it electronically. So we have, hopefully, decent numbers in the renewal area. I don't yet know what the applications look like, and more to come next month on our budget and where we stand. You may also remember that before the legislature recessed, they did pass what they call a skinny budget, which is the recommendation exclusively provided by the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, which is the legislature's budget office. It does differ for us in particular by about $200,000. The governor's office comes out with their own projection and their own recommendation for the budget, and normally after most bills have passed, the legislature grapples with their budget and the governor's budget, and they compromise on something in the middle. That has not happened, and it may not happen if they sine die early, or they may consider making amendments to the legislature's budget that they did pass. If that happens, I expect any amendments they make to the state budget will be directly related to COVID and the need for special services related to the pandemic. If that happens, we will not see the extra $200,000. So that will put us behind again with regard to our requests to digitize. And we had another, the AGISA and a few other financial concerns that we may have to put on hold, given the fact we won't have the money to actually spend, but we should have our basic operations, our personal services and other things covered by the baseline budget that Joint Legislative Budget Committee passed. So, and again, it's just still all up in the air because nobody quite knows how much things have cost yet and what the impact will ultimately be on the state financially. So that's all I know so far about COVID and our budget. And I can tell you that NCARB, who uses Prometric, will be closed longer than they planned. The latest date I heard was until May 31. Pearson View, which provides testing services to NCWS and CLARB, are also planning to be closed until at least May 31. We had hoped they would open up in a limited capacity, but it doesn't appear yet that they are up for that because the testing centers still need to make accommodations for social distancing and safety for the test takers. So I think all the national councils are really just waiting for the test providers to say it's okay for people to come into the centers and test. And I don't know how it yet affects the home inspector national exam. I believe they're in much the same position.
So regarding the land surveyor state specific that we do here, Melissa, do you envision that the NCEES would have trouble processing anything that we might do that's out of sync with their test phases, which would put us in a position to align with their policies or when they reopen?
So I think what I hear you asking is whether we could offer people the Arizona specific before they pass the PLS?
I was thinking probably the inverse of that. Because of the records keeping with the NCEES, would we be doing a disservice by maybe creating a backlog of information? I mean, would we be in a better position if we align with the NCEES policy? When they open back up with Pearson View, we would do our counterpart here at Arizona. Is that a good place for us to be? As far as the record keeping and backlog, because what we would be doing is be creating all these records that would be kind of stockpiled, log jammed, until the NCEES could keep up with them when they get back to their testing.
Well, I don't think so, Jason. I think most of our surveyor applicants, by majority, are licensed surveyors in other jurisdictions and would apply to us already having passed the NCWS exams, fundamentals and professional surveying, and then just want to take our state specific to be registered here. We can still offer that test by spacing out the applicants in time and in location here at the board office. So I apologize, I don't know how many surveyors applied to take our state specific in the past month or so. But our staff has been trying to collect those applications and administer the exam only once. We don't necessarily have to do that. There are months where we have five people take it, months where we have one person take it. So we could spread out our own internal administration by letting some people take it on a Wednesday and others take it on a Friday if we get a large number, which wouldn't forestall folks from getting registered in Arizona as surveyors, if that's helpful to you.
Okay, so in a larger sense of uniformity, when you look at a registrant that's coming from here or there or wherever, the NCEES, I guess what I'm asking is, does the NCEES set a comfortable benchmark for us to follow? And with their testing, when they open back up, is that a good time for us to open back up or to consider opening up our testing? I'm assuming that we're not giving the tests right now.
We
have one, I think, in May.
We have not stopped offering our state-specific exam. It's just no one has asked to take it during this time frame. And I don't know that we necessarily have to stop because we can accommodate social distancing here at the board as long as there are lower numbers of people interested and having applied to take it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And we always wait we wait to see that someone has actually already passed fundamentals and professional before we offer them the state-specific anyway. So there would be, in that case, some kind of delay because NCWS hasn't been able to offer their test to the public yet.
Okay.
So, but we're still able to offer it to those who have already taken and passed and are licensed in another jurisdiction.
So I guess if Pearson View is closed,
mm-hmm.
I see some comfort in the uniformity of acting parallel with them.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a reason they're closed. They're in the test business. They're going to get back online as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they might establish a comfortable benchmark for us if we if we feel the need to. We just haven't had the opportunity to. Or we haven't been asked the question to give a test yet. But if we do and there's some level of discomfort or something that the governor said that prohibits us from doing the tests, I think that's a benchmark that we could comfortably look at. So
okay,
that's all.
That's fair. And I think a lot of it is obviously up to the applicants. You know, do they want to come in during this time and take a test? And they might if they know we can provide social distancing and, you know, other safety precautions for them, or they might choose to wait. It's really up to them.
Melissa Jean Montgomery, I have a question for you. With the extension now in Pearson View not opening up their test centers for yet perhaps another month, or maybe as late as June, have you received any applications for licensure for engineering without examination, which was permitted now by Governor Pelosi's order?
We have not. We have only received one application from a home inspector for that provisional no need for testing license.
Okay, so we have no cases for engineering or architecture.
Correct. To date, we have none.
Okay.
And I think that's inherent in your professions, not wanting to proceed to work professionally without having passed those minimal competency exams.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So, and that's really all I have to report, unless you have questions or you want to discuss the specific case updates that I put in the report or the CLEAR webinar or any of the statistics.
Well, you want to tell them name cards canceled?
Oh, right. Neil and I received an email from NCARB regarding their annual meeting, which was scheduled to take place in Houston the third week of June, and that has been canceled and replaced with a one-day annual meeting that will be telephonic on June 19. We will be sent instructions and information about how to log into that meeting, because pursuant to their bylaws as an association, they have to have an annual meeting for the membership to vote on the various motions and resolutions that they feel are critical to moving their organization forward. So hopefully we'll get more information about that. Obviously, any of you are welcome to participate in that meeting if you're available on June 19 and you wish to be on the call, which should be an all-day phone call.
Oh, it'll be a blast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How do we get in the back of the room if it's telephonic?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I will have the phone on all day, so you're welcome to join in or hear a report from me after the meeting concludes. Either way, we'll let you know when we get more info. And we still haven't heard about NCWS. Their annual meeting, obviously, is it? Neil's very upset about not going to Houston, but
Austin.
It was Austin.
What? It's Austin, Texas.
It was Austin. Okay. It's Texas somewhere. Anyway, NCWS's annual meeting isn't until the end of August, so I think they're still waiting to see what conditions are like before they determine what they'll do with regard to their meeting. And CLARB's annual meeting is even later. It's in September, so we may know more later. Good. So please all stay safe and healthy. And again, thank you for all your hard work and your dedication to the board.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
The next item is future board meetings. Our regular meeting would be May 26th, the day after Memorial Day. I'm looking at the opportunity to have an interim meeting. Melissa, do you foresee any need for that or any opportunity?
I think that's not a bad idea, Jason, because we don't know at this point what the legislature will do. So if we meet in between, we may know whether we want to, whether the legislature is going to meet, and if they do, if they're bringing back up Senate Bill 1274, which is the board composition bill, and whether you want to do anything in that regard. You may also want more updates about our budget or any other issues, but it's entirely up to you.
I think we're well informed on the state bills and what we need to do. It's just, is there going to be any updates on the lawsuit? Probably not.
Well, actually, that's a good question. It wasn't on our agenda today because council didn't feel they had anything new to report. But
okay, let's stick with the calendar here and future dates. We didn't have that.
We're talking about whether to have an interim or not.
That's right. It could be an issue for the interim meeting.
So that's really the only issue.
Splitting the dates between this meeting and the next meeting would exactly be the 12th, Tuesday the 12th. So
it's
is that
a week?
What's that?
It's like a week.
Cinco de Mayo is in a week.
Oh yeah.
So Cinco de Twelvo is in 2 weeks.
I celebrate all of them.
So
that puts us at the 12th to be exactly in between. I'll look to you, Melissa. Does maybe the end of next week look better, the 7th, the 8th, or do we want to stretch it out till the 12th?
I don't know.
Let's say
let's do the 12th for now, and if something changes, we'll email and say we need to move it up.
Okay, anybody on the phone? Is everybody on the phone good with the 12th?
But it wouldn't that only be if we have an update from Greg?
Yeah, well,
and if we don't have an update for Greg, there's really no need to have a meeting.
Well, or there might be legislation.
Or legislation.
Well, yeah, we'll put the placeholder in case they need to build an agenda and advertise. So, okay, so what I'll do then is I'll schedule the future board meetings for the 12th is the interim meeting and the 26th is the regular meeting. Is there any suggested topics for future meeting agenda? Anybody on the phone on that one?
No.
No, thank you.
Now, what is the purpose of the 12th meeting, the meeting on May 12th?
Just to hear about possible legislation and what's been going on with the lawsuit.
Got it. Good.
So it would be telephonic starting at 9 a.m. and hopefully not long.
Okay, so future topics.
Hey, Jason, I just rejoined. I realize you guys are on future topics.
A little late, we're adjourning.
Yeah, I know.
Wait 5 minutes.
Now, were okay, you, well, you working on a proposal for ADOT?
I don't know if I'm going to be doing any more of those.
Okay, so I didn't hear anything for future topics. Alejandro, did you want to add anything to that?
No, sir.
Okay, just to jump back, we're gonna schedule a meeting for the 12th, an interim meeting for the 12th, the 26th.
As a potential future meeting agenda topic, do you want to put on the results of the surveying task force report consideration, or do you think it's too early?
Let's get through COVID.
Okay.
I don't think anything's going to happen from that. So, but that's good. That's a great thought. So that concludes item 11. We'll go to adjournment. Anybody want to move? Neil, you've been quite the mover and shaker this meeting. I'm looking at you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adjourn today's meeting.
Jack, do you want to do the shaking?
Let's do it. Let's go for it. I'm all over
second
that.
Second from Jack. Meeting adjourned.
Apparently Andy's mute today.
12:25.